Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, a podcast about the people who make Star Trek, past, present, and future. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And this is our very first episode.
Woohoo! Yay!
Okay, so before we get started, let's just introduce ourselves for people who may not know us. John.
Hey, Mike.
You're a podcaster.
I am. I do. I am a podcaster, and you may remember me from Commentary Trek Stars, a show that I previously co-hosted, which covered Star Trek creatives, but we're taking a new approach on this one. And I actually co-host a Star Wars podcast with Trek FM's own Matthew Rushing called Aggressive Negotiations, and appear on a show with my buddy Craig called Words with Nerds. Now, Mike, you are sort of the godfather of this format. This is going to be another learning experience for everybody. But where else can they locate you on the interwebs?
I also did a show called Commentary Trek Stars right here on Trek FM. It sounds similar to the one that you were on, where we did talk about, you know, the work that Star Trek creators did outside of Star Trek, and that's it sounds very similar to what we're doing here, but this is going to be a different approach for sure. You know, this is going to be looking at the now more than the then. We're certainly going to look at the then, you know, and there will be times where we look at previous works that people have done, but we're going to do it in a different way. We're not going to do these like long, intense examinations. Right. We're going to kind of look at them through a different lens and say, like, what were the movies that Stuart Baird edited for the studio, which got him the job for Nemesis? You know, but more than that, we're going to look at what Star Trek creators have coming out soon. You know, what are the new movies which are by Star Trek writers or by Star Trek directors or starring Star Trek actors? And we're also going to look at, I mean, this is a new thing for us for sure, who is working on the new Star Trek, right? Because we've talked about all of the legacy people, but we've got a new Star Trek show coming out, and it's pretty exciting, not to mention a new Star Trek movie. And we've got all new people who have had long and very critically acclaimed careers that have never worked in Star Trek. So we're going to say, hey, you want an idea of who's making your new Trek? Well, then take a look at this other stuff. So that's kind of what we're doing here.
Because there's more the now to talk about than the then.
Yeah.
Because the now is really the to come more than the then. And right now I feel like I'm stuck in that scene from Spaceballs where they're talking about when will then be now? Soon.
Which, by the way, you know, Tim Russ was in Spaceballs. So yeah, if we wanted to, we could.
Oh my gosh, you're right. Yes, you're right. He was.
If we wanted to, we could talk about Spaceballs, but we're not going to because that movie is bad. So,
bite your tongue. See, you're starting a fight. Here we are in show one, and we're already fighting. Let's move past this. We'll talk about that later. Let's focus on the positive.
Okay. Well, let's talk about why we're calling this show Stage 9. Shall we?
Let's do it.
It's because Stage 9 is the stage on, at the time, the Desilu lot where Star Trek was first made. Star Trek, the original series, was shot on Stage 9, which is now Paramount Stage 31, because Paramount, you know, obtained Desilu, and then, oh, they had two Stage 9s right next to each other, so that's confusing. So they were like, oh, well, we'll make that Stage 31. So to give people an idea, I mean, if you want to see what Stage 9 looks like, watch any episode of the original series. But if you want to see get an idea of what Stage 9 looks like now, or at least did a few weeks ago, that Star Trek Beyond fan event, which was on the Paramount lot just a couple weeks ago, where they debuted the new trailer and everything, that they were sitting there right there on stage 9, now stage 31. It's never simple. We can't just call something stage 9 because that's where they shot. We need to explain, like, well, stage 9, I mean, it's not stage 9 now because stage 9 now, that was, I think that was where we're getting into this whole the then versus the now thing. Exactly. Here,
and I'm going to get confused again and I'm going to cry. So
we're calling it stage 9. But if you visit the Paramount lot and you want to see the stage 9 that we're talking about, ask them to take you to stage 31.
It's like National Treasure, only of production sound stages.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
But regardless, that's why we're calling it stage 9, because that's where people who make Star Trek are. They're on a stage making this show, you know? So, okay. This show will be an exploration of people who make Star Trek. We're focusing on their careers, their past work, looking at what they have coming up in the future, and then also introducing listeners to the new people who are working on the franchise right now. So that's what you can expect from this. And that'll take different forms. Like, it's going to be much more kind of like the other shows on the network, where there will be a different topic each week, and it might take the form of a commentary, or it might take the form of, you know, looking at, let's say, as someone's work throughout Star Trek, or maybe like ranking our five favorite, you know, writers or whatever. It could be anything. If you have any ideas, let us know. You know, we are more than willing to take suggestions, because we will certainly need them. And in addition to this, every episode is going to start off with a news component, kind of similar to what they do on Literary Treks in the Ready Room, where they talk about the news of Star Trek, or the news of Star Trek, you know, literature or whatever. We're going to talk about the news of Star Trek creators, whether that means, you know, new people who have been added to the team, or whether that means people going off and doing new projects that have just been announced or whatever. We're definitely going to start each and every episode off with that, because there is new Star Trek news, Star Trek creator news every single week.
Yeah, it really is exciting. You know, like, I honestly didn't even realize until like all of the news started breaking and they had the Beyond event and they started making all of the announcements and Fuller starts announcing the team. I didn't realize exactly what a drought of Star Trek it's been. You know, I mean, sure, you've got like the fan stuff going on, you know, and stuff like that. But in terms of official Star Trek, it really has thrown into relief how we've all just sort of been on autopilot for so long, just waiting for something. And now that there's this flood of news, it's almost overwhelming, because but this is what happens when a franchise is alive and active.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there are a lot of stories which are making headlines, you know, like Nicholas Meyer, when he, you know, there was a press release about that and everything. It's like, oh my God, Nicholas Meyer is writing Star Trek again. And we'll be talking about that in a second. And, you know, rightfully so and everything like that. But there's also a lot of stuff which kind of falls through the cracks, and things which don't really get announced. It's more just like, oh yeah, and well, who's doing this? Well, that guy. It's like, whoa. Step back a minute and let's talk about what that means, because, you know, so we're definitely going to be digging for that info and bringing it to you, and, you know, putting a spotlight on everyone, not just the big names. So, yeah. So how about we delve into some news this week, because, you know, we haven't been doing any podcasting for a month, and there's a lot of stuff that happened in this past month in relation to Star Trek.
It's been active.
So let's talk about it. Let's jump right into it here.
Yes.
Brian Fuller's Star Trek television show.
Woo-hoo.
What, 2 days before the Star Trek Beyond trailer dropped? They dropped a trailer for this at the CBS upfronts.
Mm-hmm.
Not much in the trailer.
No.
Bunch of stuff flying around. Fuller said that there were some Easter eggs, but, you know, whatever. More importantly than that, they dropped some information about who's working on this show. So let's just take a look at the crew of this new Star Trek show. By crew, I mean people making the show, not people flying the ship.
Right.
We don't know that yet. But yeah, we've got a pretty good idea of some of the key players in this thing. So I figure the best way to do it is to just go down the list sort of in terms of like their role, seniority or whatever, and, you know, take a look at and see who it is that is making this show. So let's start with the writers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've got Brian Fuller, who everyone is excited about. He got a start on Deep Space. He got a start in the industry on Deep Space Nine with two stories that he wrote, The Darkness and The Light and M'Pok Nor. And then the following year, he joined the writing staff of Voyager in season 4. And he wrote 30 episodes of Voyager to some degree or another, including Living Witness, Flesh and Blood, and Workforce.
Yep.
So that's exciting. After leaving Star Trek, he created a bunch of shows of his own, all of which were critically acclaimed, all of which were canceled fairly early in their runs.
Yeah, it sort of became sort of a running joke that, you know, Brian Fuller enjoying critical acclaim and his show got canceled the next day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Those shows included Dead Like Me, Wonderfalls, Pushing Daisies, and Hannibal.
Hannibal.
Yeah, which I need to watch still.
Oh my gosh, you need to watch that show.
No, I know. I just got my Manhunter Director's Cut
restored
Blu-ray disc, so I'm going to watch that, and then I'm going to get in that.
It is. I'll let you know, it's a Michael Mann movie. It's completely unlike what Brian Fuller did. Brian Fuller went to the source material and said, you know what, this is a starting point, and we're going to do something really bold and daring and different. And Michael Mann said, this is a great book, and I'm going to make Miami Vice, but with these characters.
And yeah, I mean, I've seen Manhunter a million times, you know.
I'm not knocking it. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's great. It's a great movie. And I've seen the pilot for Hannibal, and I was very fond of that as well. I can't wait to watch the rest of it.
Oh, yeah.
But right now I'm on Wonderfalls. I finished Dead Like Me. I'm on Wonderfalls right now. All of the shows are good. Pushing Daisies is the one that was the most critically acclaimed. He was nominated for an Emmy for his screenplay for the pilot for that one. Is he the perfect choice to run this show?
Yes.
I think he is. It's one of those like magical things where it's like people had been saying this for years, like Brian Fuller is the guy who you would want to write this because he got his start in Star Trek and he says he wants to come back. It's his dream job and he's a huge fan of Star Trek. And he's gone off after making Star Trek and he's become a highly successful, highly acclaimed name. You know, even if his shows are getting canceled, you know, the next day, he's obtained this level of like cult status and this level of prestige that you bring Brian Fuller in to run Star Trek and everyone's going to be like, yes, you know,
not just for starting Trek, but the fact that he can take a source material and spin it in such a way. I'm a huge fan of Red Dragon and Silence of the Lambs, and Hannibal was a well-written book, although it wasn't great, but I was a huge fan of those first two books. And what he did to give very subtle fan service while making it accessible to non-fans. Like, my wife was watching the show with me and she's like, oh, that's so neat. Oh, that's so neat. And I was sitting there going, oh, that's so neat. And he got that little bit in the corner from page 237. Like, I knew where he was getting these things from. And it's beautiful. He knows how to take a source material and just tweak it just a little bit. I mean, you know, even look at his, I forget the name of the episode, Bride of Chaotica, where he turned the Captain Proton thing on its head, and he just had fun with it. But it was giving respect to the source material, but at the same time being neat and fun and different with it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the perfect choice. It's insane that they got him.
Yeah. You know?
So exciting. So exciting. And he's assembling an amazing team. I mean, my God, you know, you look at the people who he has working on this show and it's insane. And we will look at them right now.
Because, yes.
Okay. I think his right-hand man and woman.
Persons. Are, right-hand persons.
Right-hand persons are Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts, because they're listed as executive producers in the press release. Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts are people who have worked with Fuller in the past. They wrote for both Wonderfalls and Pushing Daisies. Mm-hmm. They got their start on Beverly Hills 90210. They were writers on that show. And then they went on to write for Roswell under Ron Moore, which
that's a good
I love
show.
Roswell. Yeah. I can't get enough of that show. I have a personal connection to that show because my wife and I, back when we were first, you know, like hanging out, that was the show that we watched together. Anyway, it was good stuff. Yeah.
You know what? See, this is what sets Stage 9 apart. Is we're getting the softer side of Mike Schindler right now, the romantic side.
Yep. So yes, you know, Roswell, very, you know, I mean that, and I've seen a couple of the episodes that they've done on Wonderfall so far. I haven't gotten all the way through, but there's one in particular that they wrote, which I think is the one that really kind of stands out to me. It's the Pink Flamingo episode. So yeah, I'm on board with them for sure. They also created their own show called Pepper Dennis, which in the great Fuller tradition was canceled after like 8 episodes.
They learned from the best.
Yeah. It starred Rebecca Romijn as a television reporter in Chicago. And I don't know. I saw a couple scenes from it, which are on YouTube, as well as the opening credit sequence. And I think they were really trying to go after sort of like the Ally McBeal vibe kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it looked cool. I'd like to see it. And most recently, they were writers and executive producers on the show Rain, which I haven't seen.
I have not seen that either.
It's on Netflix. And so is Roswell. So definitely check them out, especially their Roswell stuff.
Yeah.
It's great.
Highly recommended.
Okay, another person on the writing staff is Jesse Alexander.
Yes.
He's someone who has also worked with Brian Fuller in the past on Heroes.
Coincidental, I'm sure.
Coincidental, yes.
Yeah, and he also worked on Hannibal, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He worked on Hannibal. And he's worked with Alex Kurtzman, who's the executive producer on this show, who we'll get to in a minute, on Alias, which... I mean, Alias, especially there's a two-parter that he wrote called The Box, which starred Quentin Tarantino as basically Hans Gruber in a sort of like Die Hard setting.
Yeah.
It's so good. One of my absolute favorite episodes of Alias, and I loved that show. So I'm super excited. And if you look at his like posts on Twitter and stuff like that, I get the impression that Jesse Alexander is... as big of a Star Trek fan as any of us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's posting pictures of himself wearing uniforms. Mm-hmm. He's posting pictures of himself with his Star Trek book collection.
And by the way, something I noticed, because people notice in one of the pictures, like that the JJ-verse Enterprise was there and then it wasn't there in one of the pictures. Yeah. I looked at that picture probably more closely than I needed to. But there was a patch in that spot. I think they purposely covered it up to screw with people.
I don't know why they covered it up, but yeah, it certainly does look like they got rid of the JJ-verse Enterprise. For those people who don't know, there's a lot of pictures because everyone who goes there is obviously going to take this picture because it's the coolest thing to take a picture of. In the writer's room at the production offices for the new show, on one wall they have like silhouettes of every single Enterprise from the NX-01 all the way through the E and then the JJ-verse painted onto the wall. And for some reason, it seems like in the past few weeks, they have painted over the JJ-verse Enterprise. He's also written for Heroes, and he most recently, I think, was showrunner. He was executive producer on a show called Agent X, which I haven't seen, but... And he won an Emmy for producing season one of Lost. So
that's a show that I'm familiar with.
I know. Yeah. And I've seen season one, too, and I loved it. So
season one is pretty fantastic. So are seasons 2 through 7, but that's okay. That's just me.
I need to see the rest. I really do.
Yes, you do.
I will.
It's on Netflix.
Talk about them here. I know. And I've got all the Blu-rays here, too. I just need to get to it. So Okay, so there's another guy who's writing for this show. His name is Nicholas Meyer.
Yeah.
You may have heard of him. Mm-hmm. He's written a few. He's actually worked on Star Trek in the past. He directed a couple of the movies, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. And he also wrote The Undiscovered Country as well as The Voyage Home. And he ghost wrote Star Trek II as well.
You know what? I want to go back, though, because this is something I've never known. As concise an answer as possible. If Payne and McKay and Orsi can be booted from Star Trek Beyond, why couldn't Sowards, however you pronounce it, Jack B. Sowards, get booted from the Star Trek II script? Because all accounts are the only thing that was held onto was the Genesis device that he came up with.
You know, I actually asked John Tenuto about that one time. I asked him, I can't remember. It's on some podcast somewhere, I think, like, because he's read every draft of everyone's scripts for Star Trek II. And I'm like, if you were in charge of the credits, if you were working for the Writers Guild, how would you have credited the screenplay? And he's like, well, I probably would have done, I forget exactly what he said, but I think he basically said, like, I would have done story by Harve Bennett and Jack B. Sowards, screenplay by Nicholas Meyer. He might have said Sowards as well, but there is definitely stuff, you know, he's like, they definitely, you know, there is stuff in there. It's just that Meyer is the one who, he's like, the big thing, it's not that the credits which are on screen shouldn't be there. It's more that it's a glaring omission that Meyer is not credited with writing the screenplay as well.
Do you think that possibly Paramount screwed him just to not pay him more?
I mean, there is definitely like a huge story behind that. And, you know, I don't remember the exact details, but it was basically a thing where it's like they didn't want to hire him as a screenwriter because, you know, it would have taken too long to figure out the deal. And he basically volunteered to do it for free, knowing that if he didn't, there'd be no way that he would direct it. So I don't know.
Man.
It's, yeah.
Hats off to him then for taking, I mean, seriously, taking that bullet. I mean, because that's, you know, what better way to sort of, you know, he's getting his foot in the door and like announcing to Hollywood, he's like, I'll play ball. I just want the job.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
You got to admire that. That's, you know, it had to sting a little bit, but you got to admire it.
Yeah, because it was only his second movie. At that point, he had directed Time After Time, and that was it. Which, by the way, there is a Time After Time television show coming to CBS this fall. Kevin Williamson from Scream is doing it.
Oh.
And there's a trailer. You can find it online. But it's interesting because Nicholas Meyer was just at the University of Iowa to give like a talk there because that's his alma mater or whatever. And I saw it. You can find the talk on YouTube. I highly recommend it. It's really interesting. But up front, he says a couple things. I can't really talk about the new Star Trek television series, or else I'd have to kill you. And then he says, I also can't talk about the new Time After Time television series, or else I'd have to kill myself. So it sounds like he's not on board with this new interpretation, but I'm excited to see it. So
I'm not.
Look for that this fall.
I'm no. not. You kind of lost me earlier in the description of the show. I'll let everybody guess where I got lost.
Kevin Williamson.
And so Nicholas Meyer has contributed a lot to Star Trek. And
yes,
it's very, very interesting. What
obviously
he has done.
He's the, I mean, this is like the same as Lawrence Kasdan being announced as the writer of Force Awakens. It's like, what?
Because you mean the writer director of Grand Canyon? Awesome.
it's one of those things where it's just, I mean, again, mind blowing. Like, how is this a thing which exists? And he's like, nobody asked me before. Why? You know, let's do it. And I mean, it's just so great that he's there. He's there in any capacity, but you know, especially as a writer. And, you know, I mean, he's known for his movies, but he's actually been nominated for 3 Emmys. He was nominated for a TV movie called The Night That America Panicked, which I haven't seen, but I need to see. It was directed by Joseph Sargent, who's a Star Trek director, by the way. And it's about the night that Orson Welles' War of the Worlds radio drama aired, which is really a really cool idea. Then he was also nominated for The Day After, which of course is an amazing movie. And he was also nominated for the miniseries The Odyssey, which he had nothing to do with, and I think has even said that he hasn't seen. So,
and I definitely want to make sure that everybody is clear that it's The Day After, not The Day After Tomorrow, which was a terrible disaster movie.
Slightly,
and a disaster of a movie.
Slightly different movies, yes. The Day After is known for being an incredibly realistic portrayal of what would happen if, at the time, America and the Soviet Union launched their nuclear missiles at each other. The Day After Tomorrow was voted by NASA as the least plausible science fiction movie ever made. So there you go.
That's saying something. You got to think about that.
You know what? I'm wrong about that. It's not the most. 2012 was the most. Day After Tomorrow was on the list still. But
I think even making the list, that really speaks volumes. You don't have to take the top spot on that one. You don't want to be anywhere near the podium.
I guess you're right. I guess you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. There's another guy who's on this writing staff who I think is a wild card, the biggest wild card when it comes to the staff. And I don't mean that as in like he could suck, because he's an extremely accomplished writer. But yep. He's someone who has never written a movie or a television show which has been produced. However, he's written in just about every other medium that you could write something in. He was a journalist for years. Then he wrote a memoir, and then he wrote some plays. His name is Kemp Powers. Mm-hmm. His memoir is called The Shooting, which sounds extremely powerful. And the fact that he can be a journalist and, you know, I mean, not a novelist, but a book author, and then also write for the stage, I think is really impressive, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, those seem like very different disciplines. His play, which has been very, very critically acclaimed, has won a billion awards and has played all over the country and is getting ready to play in London. It's called One Night in Miami, and it's based on it's historical fiction. This is something which actually happened, where the night that Muhammad Ali knocked out Sonny Liston. Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's when he became the heavyweight champion of the
yes.
world. Right. Well, apparently after that fight, that night, Muhammad Ali went to a hotel room where three of his good friends, Malcolm X, Sam Cooke, and Jim Brown were. And the four of them just hung out in a hotel room that night.
Mm-hmm.
And no one knows what happened in that room. But the next morning is when, you know, Muhammad Ali announced that he was, you know, a part of the Nation of Islam and all that stuff, and it was like a life-changing thing.
Yeah.
So this play speculates as to what happened in that room, and you know, you've got these four icons from four sort of very different backgrounds and fields or whatever, all in a room just talking for yeah. like an hour and a half. I mean, it sounds so cool. I really want to see this.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the type of show that theater was. You got me in the seat. Like, everybody always goes to the, you know, the big. I love musicals. I adore musicals. I'm not being facetious when I say that the musical as an art form is the one true giant, fantastic contribution that American theater ever made to the world. But. A play like that, One Night in Miami, you've got my butt in the seat immediately. I want to see this. I want to see this take on it. And yeah, I mean, you know, because that would be a fascinating character study at the least.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I haven't read any of Powers's work. I haven't seen any of his plays, unfortunately, but I have listened to some interviews with him and seen some stuff that he's done on YouTube and stuff like that. And he seems like the coolest guy ever. Like, I just want to hang out with this guy.
Yeah.
You know, he seems like he's a total nerd, which is good.
You're working on Star Trek. That's a good plan. Yeah.
But it also seems like if there's like a through line through his work, you know, which is very disparate in terms of its, you know, form, it's all very socially conscious and all about making commentary on society, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that that's obviously very good for Star Trek, which is, you know, kind of all about that.
Supposed to be.
So that's very exciting. So there's one more person who has, it's just been revealed, has joined the writing staff of this new show, and that person is Kirsten Beyer. Now, Kirsten Beyer has not written a single movie. She has not written a single television show or episode or anything like that, and yet the Star Trek fan reaction to this announcement is on par with the Nicholas Meyer announcement. Why? Well, we have someone here to tell us why. It's Charlene from To the Journey.
To the Journey.
Woo. Hey, how's it going? How'd you get here? You never know who's going to show up on stage.
That's right.
I just beamed in via Pathfinder. We've got that system going pretty well and steady in the Delta Quadrant now. And so, yeah, thanks for having me. It's really good to be here. Really excited to be talking about some Kirsten MFing Beyer.
Well, we are too.
that's how she addresses herself. Well, not addresses. That's how she finishes off any messages she leaves on the Trek BBS. It's the one place you can catch her online because otherwise, frankly, she is busy like living her life and doing other things. You won't find her on social media or anything like that at all. And when she became a New York Times bestselling author, she wasn't just Kirsten Beyer. She wasn't New York Times bestselling author either. She was New York Times mother effin' bestselling author Kirsten Beyer. She owned it so hardcore, and gosh, I love her, if you couldn't tell.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those weird things. For those people who don't know, she is the author of the Voyager relaunch novels. And that's why everyone's so excited. It's one of those things where, you know, I haven't really read any of the books. And I don't know, John, have you?
No, I haven't read a word one.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to get you on the train.
It's one of those things where, like, I really want to. But then, you know, like, someone showed me, like, a chart. You know, and it's got like, it basically looks like a Jackson Pollock painting, you know, and it's like, I can't commit to that. But one of the things which always stood out to me and which I always thought was really cool was, while you've got like a number of people writing a number of books and people will go off and they'll write an original series book and a Deep Space Nine book or whatever, like Voyager was like set aside and it's like, okay, this is Kirsten Beyer's domain. And, like, she's the one. Yep. She's the showrunner. She's the Voyager Season 8 showrunner. And I always thought that was really cool.
Yeah, so, it's been her baby since 2009, exclusively.
I mean, that's great. I mean, look at that. That's like, the length of a, like, series run on one of these shows,
right?
You know?
7 years. She's done it. Just in novel form.
All by herself. So, now, okay, just for those people who don't know, the books that she has written are Full Circle, Unworthy, Children of the Storm, Eternal Tide, Protectors, Acts of Contrition, A Pocket Full of Lies? I can't read my own handwriting. Okay. And Atonement. So, okay, my first question for you is, what is the Voyager relaunch?
Okay, that is a very loaded question, and I won't be a total cop-out and say, oh, but you should just read them and find out. Of course I'm going to recommend that you do that, but in a very concise definition, it is where, if you've read Christy Golden's books, she talks a little bit about what happens after Voyager gets home. Kirsten Beyer kind of reaches a point where now they are back in the Delta Quadrant. They have mastered slipstream technology and they have a small fleet of ships out there in the Delta Quadrant trying to kind of continue the mission. You know, strange new worlds, seek out new life, new civilizations, make peace with the folks who weren't maybe so kind when Voyager encountered them, and that sort of a thing.
So the whole crew has come back? Everybody's come back to all the characters that we're familiar with?
Not quite. I mean, they are in the novels, but Tuvok is not aboard the ship.
Oh.
Seven of Nine is not aboard the ship. She is off doing other things. The Doctor is off doing things. And so you have actually a really interesting mix of a lot of familiar folks from Voyager, but also some new blood, as well as other crew members on other ships that are a part of the fleet. So you are reading about intricate tales from a lot of different perspectives and people with a lot of things going on, because they run into trouble constantly out there.
Sure.
It's as much as it is about the exploration, it's also, okay, what is it? What is the crisis going to be this time? Because they have always seemed to have managed to find themselves in some trouble.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So Christy Golden, she wrote the first few books, which I actually read her Star Wars book, and it's awesome. But
yes, it is.
You said that like that was more about, you know, the stuff that was going on right after the show, and I, you know, looking at the timeline, yeah, that's like a year after the show. And then Byers' first book, Full Circle, looks like it takes place over the span of like 3 years, and it almost seems to me like it's setting up what's coming, you know, further down the line, right?
Yes.
So as someone who maybe does not have an infinite amount of time to read a bunch of books, would it be okay to start with Full Circle?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, that is what I would recommend if somebody is on a time crunch and doesn't want to invest in all the books. If you want to get the Cliff's Notes versions, jump into Full Circle. You'll be fine. You'll figure out what you need to know that happens in the other novels. It'll catch you up. And overall, it is a really freaking good book. So if you want some insight into Kirsten Byers' writing, that's a great place to start.
Is there a book in the series that's like head and shoulders above the rest? Like are one of these books, ooh, like Kirsten Byers' Citizen Kane?
Well, I mean, I do love all of her writing, to be quite honest. Each book is a very interesting tale, and it sort of depends on what you're looking for a little bit. I would say Full Circle is right up there at the top. That's what kind of hooked me in and got me reading the Voyager novels again, because I did take a little bit of a break. I didn't read Christy Golden's books right when they came out. I went back, actually, and caught up, and then read the backlog of Kirsten Byers' novels that I'd not read yet. The other one that I would recommend potentially is The Eternal Tide, especially if you're a Janeway fan, because that's very Janeway-centric.
Okay.
So
all
I'd
right.
say,
Eternal
I don't know if that's for Citizen Kane, but it is damn good.
Okay, I know that some people are a little nervous, or were a little nervous, yourself included, that, you know, maybe she wouldn't continue doing these books now that she's writing for the show. And
right.
I saw Dayton Ward over on the Babel conference saying that she does still intend to write these. I know she's got like two more books planned. Is that supposed to be the end of it? Two more books and then she's done?
Or is that... Well, Dayton Ward probably doesn't know any more than we do, since he's busy doing his own thing. But what is nice to know is that since they have to plan out the books so far ahead in advance, she does have a couple already written that maybe just need some more editing, or they're just awaiting publication. So we know that we've got a couple more to come out in 2017. And then beyond that, it sounds, based off of Dayton Ward's answer, that she's going to continue writing the novels in her so-called off time. So I'm guessing when the show is off-season, that's when she's going to crank out a novel. Now, is she going to have help? Is somebody else going to come in? Maybe that hasn't even been figured out yet. I have no idea how long they've been negotiating this whole thing with her, and I suppose those are just details we'll have to knock out. But the mere fact that we know that she's going to continue writing makes me so incredibly happy. That's great. That's enough to know for now.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So, okay, as someone who has read all of these books and has a pretty good idea of what it is that Byer brings to the table, what can we expect from the new show in terms of her contribution to it? You know what I mean? What do you think that she's going to bring to the new show? I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Okay, I think she's going to bring two important things to the show. One is incredible character development. She's breathed in new life into the Voyager characters that a lot of people frankly did not like Harry Kim and Chakotay, and made them interesting, compelling characters that you want to know more about. So there's that. She's going to bring a lot of life to whatever characters it is she's writing. But even more importantly, possibly, is the fact that she is incredibly good at taking kind of like loose ends, left out by the series, whatever they are, movies, TV, you name it, and connecting them somehow. She has a real knack for that. So the rumor right now is that it's going to be, the TV show is going to be post-Undiscovered Country. Well, I could just see her finding all sorts of ties to bind back together and make them all just seem like, hey, that's what they planned all along. It completely makes sense, and we just didn't know it at the time. She's got a real talent for that.
That is exciting. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm super, yeah, if you couldn't tell, I'm super excited she's going to be on this stuff, because she is incredibly talented, despite the fact that she's never written, as far as I know, she's not written Star Trek, but I don't know if she's ever written TV, ever. It's a big testament to how much Brian Fuller believes in her. But I feel like he's assembling this dream team, too. He's getting the best from every resource he can possibly get that knows Star Trek inside and out. And boy, Kirsten Byers certainly does. So it's just a great addition to this team he's already got going. He's
for
doing
sure.
a great job. Yeah, just phenomenal. It's so excited.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is very exciting. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to stop by here and tell us a little bit about Kirsten Byers. Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, thank you so much for having me. The news, we were all jabbering about it all day today, so it was great stuff. I've been so thrilled with Star Trek news in quite a long time, and that is as somebody who went to the Star Trek Beyond event. I was one of those lucky people that got to go. This is even better on a different level.
And that was on Stage 9, by the way. This is your second
right.
time
yeah.
here.
There you
now
go.
It's called Stage 31, but you know,
well,
whatever.
Yeah, but hey, yeah. But if you want to reach me on the internet gushing more about Kirsten Byers, you can go on Twitter, and my handle is OhTheProfanity. And, of course, we're probably going to bring this up on To The Journey, if not a little bit before you release this podcast, or right around anyway. So look around for current and maybe a couple past episodes, depending on what your schedule is. So, yeah, check that out. New episodes drop on Thursdays.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for coming on board and being our Captain Picard to show us on our way, like, you know,
hey,
like an
no
emissary
problem.
Or whatever.
Congratulations on the new show, guys.
Oh, well,
yay.
Thanks a lot. Yeah,
Thank you.
we'll definitely have to have you on further down the road to maybe talk about Full Circle in depth at some point.
Ooh,
yes.
Gives me a good reason to reread it.
All right. Well, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. So that's the writing staff. Very exciting. But, you know, there's one more thing which has been revealed, and that is that Alex Kurtzman not only is going to be the executive producer on this show, he's also going to direct the pilot himself, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Because it'll be cool for him to definitely put his stamp on it. He's directed, I think, an episode of Alias, and he directed one movie called People Like Us, which is a very autobiographical movie, or semi-autobiographical movie. And I definitely think it's something that we should check out at some point. Chris Pine stars in it and everything, as
oh, wow.
I guess basically as the Alex Kurtzman character. And it looks pretty interesting. It's about like a guy who finds out as an adult that he has a twin sister who he's never known about. So, yeah.
That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. And this is like based on Kurtzman's life. Like he has a twin sister who he didn't find out about until he was an adult.
I wonder if Return of the Jedi is his favorite Star Wars movie.
Maybe, you never know. He's also directing The Mummy, the new remake with Tom Cruise, which is going to launch this Universal horror movie cinematic universe thingy. So that's exciting. And
yes.
Of course, you know, as far as Star Trek is concerned, he was the writer on Star Trek 09 and Into Darkness. So,
and I like to think that he had a lot to do with the better parts of Into Darkness.
I like to think that he had anything to do with it because that movie's amazing.
We're not going to beat that dead horse.
No. But you know, suffices to say, it's cool that, you know, what we're seeing here through all of these things is Brian Fuller is bringing together a team of people who have relationships with Star Trek from all walks of life, whether it's someone like him who has, you know, worked on the Next Generation era, or someone like Kurtzman who, you know, comes from the JJ-verse, or Kristen Byers, who's a novelist, or any of these other writers who are really big fans, or Nicholas Meyer, who is arguably the person who is has written and directed the best Star Trek thing ever, you know?
He set the template.
I mean, it's a great team. It's an insane team. I mean, you know, everyone is talking about it's the dream team, and it is. It is. Yeah. But the other thing about it is, just like the dream team, or maybe like later incarnations of the dream team, it's not like every single person who has written the best Star Trek thing ever. It's not Nicholas Meyer and Ron Moore and Ira Stephen Baer. It's like people who fill a specific need, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Kirsten Beyer, she's like the author of these books, you know? Jesse Alexander, he's like a huge nerdy fan, and he's like finding people from different places and putting them all together to create a cohesive whole. You know,
not worrying about whether they're part of, you know, the script writers club, not just dealing with Star Trek, but overall, like the approach very much feels like somebody who is coming into it and saying, you know what, we can work together and get the TV scripting part of it down. I like what you explore otherwise. And we'll worry about the technical details of it later. I need your brain.
Yeah. He's like a really good Danny Ocean, you know?
He's like, yes.
He's like, we need this, we need that, we need that. And he's
putting
them all together.
He's like Ocean's 11 or Ocean's 13 Danny Ocean, not Ocean's 12 Danny Ocean.
Hey, you know what? We're not going to go down that rabbit hole either. We can at some point, because those movies were inspired by the original Ocean's 11. It was written by a Star Trek writer. But yeah, Fuller's 11. There you go.
I like that.
So yeah, exciting times, exciting times. Great, great group of people, and I mean, I don't know. We'll see who else is added in the coming weeks, but that's quite a lot of people. All right. Before we go, two things just that people should be on the lookout for that are being released this week. As we speak, as we're recording right now, the Roots miniseries is debuting, the new Roots miniseries, which LeVar Burton is producing. It's on, I think, like four channels simultaneously. I'm sure you'll be able to find it everywhere. Go check it out. It looks great. Also, coming out a week from today is Now You See Me Too, which is produced by Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orsi, just like they produced the first Now You See Me movie. So that'll be out, you know, I mean, they do the 7 p.m. shows on Thursday, but then, you know, the following Friday it'll be out. And, you know, we'll definitely talk about it in a couple weeks as well. Well, that's it for our very first episode of Stage 9. Very exciting, to be sure.
Super exciting.
Yeah. It's been fun talking about all the latest creator news and introducing this show, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
You don't create a better future and then it's just there and it's just stagnant and nothing ever threatens it, right? That's not reality.
Yeah, you'd end up with Star Trek The Next Generation if you did that, right?
Right, well, exactly. And I think that's why a lot of people who love The Next Generation don't like Deep Space Nine, because Deep Space Nine challenges that premise.
To the journey!
Say, this is what you're going to do. You're not going to film Star Trek Nemesis, that piece of crap TNG movie. You're not going to do it. You're going to make Voyager, the movie that you film. It's going to be a 2.5-hour extravaganza that really shows the struggle with the Borg instead of making it look like you beat the Borg in 1 second, you know?
Melodic Treks.
This may be the only time we get to do something, and we have to make sure it's as good as it gets, that we try and put on all the great moments.
Continuing Mission.
I would do a new issue, and I would print them out and then staple them together, and it would have weight and it would land on the table with a thump. And I was like, wow, all of that, I did this.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So be sure to check out all of these shows, great shows. And in particular, if there's one show which you're going to check out episode 2 of Literary Treks, in which Matthew Rushing interviews Kirsten Beyer and really gets into her history, how she got the gig and everything like that. It's a fascinating look at Beyer's work and her career. And I listened to it today because I was like, I know nothing about her. And now I feel like we're old friends. So definitely check that out. A Literary Treks episode 2. You can find all of these podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, you know, all the usual places. And we encourage you to check those out. We encourage you to go to Apple and leave us a review. We're a brand new show. Reviews and ratings really help us out, help us get the word out and everything like that. So please.
They make a difference for sure.
Yeah. Head on over there and let us know what you think. You know, I mean, we're not locked into a format yet. Now's the time to tell us that we're doing something wrong so that we can course correct. And we would definitely appreciate that feedback for sure. You can find us on Twitter. I'm at Mumbles3K.
I'm at Kessel Junkie.
And you can also find us on the Babel Conference, which is the Trek FM listeners forum. And yeah, if you want to send us an email with your thoughts, email us at comtrackstars@gmail.com. Okay, if you want to help us keep this show and all of the other shows on the network running, you can go to patreon.com/trekfm and become a donor. That's patreon.com/trekfm. You'll find our current goals and different milestone levels and various perks you can get at different contribution levels and everything like that. Yeah, we would definitely appreciate your support. All right. Well, that's it for our first episode. Fun times for sure. And thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Live long and listen to Stage 9.